Hello and welcome to Tapped. I'm your co-host, Joseph Fusco.
And I'm Julie Donofrio.
And today we have several topics we're going to discuss, but first off, we have to address Florida. At this recording, it is Friday, September the 8th. It is the day before Hurricane Irma is expected to make landfall in Florida. This podcast goes live on Tuesday, so we are speaking without the benefit of hindsight or knowledge of history. All we can do at this moment is keep Florida in our hearts and thoughts and prayers. If by Tuesday the devastation has been unimaginable, it's just a horrible situation, and we should call our loved ones and tell them that we love them and be thankful that we are alive.
And the truth is, this is a hurricane that has not been seen before, the likes of which have not been seen before, if it's true to what forecasters are predicting. So I know so many of you have done what you can for the folks in Houston. There was a very heartfelt video that was released with the former presidents that asks for people's continued support for Houston, which I suggest you check out. It really makes you proud, I think, to be an American, to see that people from all sides, all walks of life, are pulling together. So as we continue to help Houston, let's remember the folks in Florida, as well as Puerto Rico. They are American citizens as well. So Bahamas, Barbuda, these areas are going to need our help, whether they're Americans or not. It's just the right thing to do. So again, this is being recorded on Friday, but I know that we're going to be seeing a lot of heart-wrenching stories over this weekend. So do what you can. Continue to support the Red Cross, the Salvation Army, Habitat for Humanity. All these organizations are doing their best to help people in their hardest times. So it's a lot. It's a lot to process. Mother Nature's, she's a little angry right now.
Yes, she is. Yes, she is.
And that also, there was an earthquake in Mexico. So, you know, just again, as you said, be grateful for what you have. Tell people you love them, and be prepared. Make your plan. That's what I'm always saying. I've got extra water in my go-to bag, and yeah. I'm in New York, but you just never know. You never know.
Yeah. And to my people in Florida, I love you, and I'm thinking of you. So, the original topic of this podcast, we are going to circle back to. And today we are going to discuss David Lynch and Twin Peaks. This is your pre-spoiler alert. There will be spoilers, and we will alert you to that, but right now you're safe. So just to address, Twin Peaks The Return was an 18-hour season of Twin Peaks that played this summer on Showtime. It is picking up 25 years after the two seasons of Twin Peaks, which aired on ABC, and the theatrical film Twin Peaks Fire Walk With Me that was released in 1992. And when this show was being announced, there was a whole buzz a buzzing about it. People were very excited because Twin Peaks has engendered a very, very devoted fan base.
Yes, it brought Kyle MacLachlan to many people's minds, and who hadn't seen him prior in Dune.
Or Blue Velvet.
Blue Velvet is a movie I just saw in the last couple of years. I was a little too young when it first came out. It was inappropriate to see. But I remember the Twin Peaks. It was unlike anything I had seen on network television at the time.
Yeah.
I bought the soundtrack on CD.
I mean, the theme song was a hit on the radio.
And it just, it was the kind of television you'd go back and talk about the next day at school or at work. And just dancing little people and damn good coffee and pie and
talking into the dictaphone to Diane, who we never saw.
And Laura Palmer, who killed Laura Palmer.
It was the mystery to end all mysteries. So now, if you have never seen Twin Peaks, I would say maybe's now the time to turn off this broadcast, avert your eyes, cover your ears, hide the children, and put the pets in a safe thunder coat, because we are about to talk TP.
The Return.
So, spoiler alert, we're not going to hold back. So, 3, 2, 1, you've been warned. Kyle MacLachlan was an unknown actor in 1982 when he auditioned for the eagerly awaited big-budget Dino De Laurentiis-produced film adaptation of Frank Herbert's classic sci-fi novel, Dune. Dune was a film that had been in turnaround. Alejandro Jodorowsky was supposed to direct it. The funding fell through. And David Lynch was hot off of The Elephant Man, which had been produced by Mel Brooks, who hired him to direct it after he saw his student film Eraserhead. And so David Lynch was in that spot in his career where he had had the one film that nobody saw but had been gotten some buzz, the first sort of professional film that he got hired for, which he'd been nominated for an Academy Award and was an incredible film and a box office hit. So what do? You throw a lot of money at one of these guys and you make Dune. Then they cast an unknown actor to play the lead, Kyle MacLachlan, to play Paul Atreides, and it launched his career. It nearly killed David Lynch's career because the film was maligned and critically, and everyone stayed away from it, with the exception of myself, who saw it opening night at the late Lowe's 84th Street Quad in 70mm with my dad, and it was awesome. I loved the film. It was a very bizarre David Lynch movie, which we had never seen. David Lynch then followed that up with a very low-budget film that Dino De Laurentiis produced, because they had a two-picture deal, called Blue Velvet. Blue Velvet starred Kyle MacLachlan, Laura Dern, Isabella Rossellini, and in a career-defining performance, Dennis Hopper as Frank Booth, the villain to really end all villains. And that set Kyle's career on track. He made a couple of movies, and then in 1990, David Lynch had a deal with ABC Television and created a TV show called Twin Peaks, about a small town in Washington State, whereby the homecoming queen, Laura Palmer, has been found murdered, wrapped in plastic. And Kyle MacLachlan plays Dale Cooper, Special Agent Dale Cooper of the FBI, who's been sent in to investigate the murder. Now, 2 seasons, it died. They made a feature-length film called Twin Peaks Fire Walk With Me, which by the time it came out, there was a whole sorts of Twin Peaks fatigue, and it was seen as cashing in on the Twin Peaks phenomenon, and the movie was a prequel to the TV show. So it detailed Laura Palmer's life up until the night she is murdered. Film came out, it flopped, Twin Peaks was a distant memory, until about a couple, 2 years ago or so, when Showtime renewed it for a season.
And, you know, it was a great ploy on Showtime's part, because it is a great way to get subscribers, certainly at least for the summer of 2017. But I think it was also a way for Lynch and his writing partner Mark Frost to finish out the saga.
Yeah.
I think two seasons on network television, while a grand experiment, I think creatively they had more to say, and obviously they had 18 hours worth
yes.
to say. And we, in preparing for the return, I did see for the first time the prequel, the film, and I highly suggest for anyone who's still with us who hasn't watched any of this, or is preparing to watch The Return, to go and watch the film, because it was incredibly informative, and they actually incorporated parts of it.
Quite a lot, actually.
Yeah.
More, I would say there are more lifts, both plot-wise and actual scenes, from the film than there was from the original TV show.
Yeah.
It almost is as if that was the jumping off point, not the show. It's worth noting, I'm glad you brought up Mark Frost, who shares equal billing on Twin Peaks as the executive producer, the creator, and the writer. And he kind of gets overshadowed in credit more often than not, and it's always seen as Twin Peaks, as David Lynch's Twin Peaks. Twin Peaks would not exist without David Lynch or Mark Frost. They needed to come together to work on this. And I would be very interested to sit in that writer's room in which they wrote all 18 episodes of this season, and to see what aspects are Lynchian and what contributions are Frostian.
Right, because David has a very distinct style.
Yes.
He did direct
all 18 episodes.
18 yeah. episodes. He has an editing credit as well. He has some musical credits. So his fingerprint is on this, but I would love to see that process.
Yeah.
Because a lot of it, while there are some answers, there's a lot of questions left.
Yes. And a lot of questions. So now we're really going to talk about the show. I promise.
Let's talk casting first.
Let's talk casting. Oh my God, everyone came out to be in this show. I'm sure that they were calling him up saying, any part, any time, I don't care, I'll do it for free, because everyone was in this show.
Which was delightful in a way, and other times you went, huh?
Right, like, where did Jim Belushi come from?
Right.
Where did Tim Roth show? Why is he in this all of a sudden? And Jennifer Jason Leigh, and Laura Dern, and... Well, Laura Dern's been in all of this stuff, so that makes sense, but...
But then Alicia Witt pops up, and then you tell me...
So Alicia Witt, we have the scene where there's so many red herrings in this show, they could open a sturgeon shop. So there's some plot line that really never materialized about this creepy teenager who did some terrible things and his sort of creepy girlfriend who's got red hair, and you pointed out to me that's Alicia Witt. I didn't realize it. Alicia Witt, at age 3, got her first job in David Lynch's Dune as Kyle MacLachlan's little sister, Alia, who has magical powers, and was 3 years old and was so small that she had to be dubbed by an adult, because her voice is, like, weird. Anyways, she's dubbed, but it's 3-year-old Alicia Witt, who now at age whatever, 38, plays the maligned girlfriend of this creepy
character.
Just two
episodes, you know.
It was just a nice way to for him to reconnect with his people.
But truly, Kyle was the heavy hitter here, playing not only Agent Dale Cooper, but...
Dougie Jones,
and
Mr. C. Evil Dale.
Evil Dale,
I don't know where he pulled this out of, but my God, that was a stunning, stunning performance. I mean, all the performances were great. Dougie he started off a little annoying, but he became very endearing. And by the time actual Agent Dale Cooper shows up. I mean, we were cheering because it was so exciting. But Evil Dale.
It was a stretch. It must have been fun to play.
Oh, I'm sure. But what I found interesting, and it really shows his strength as an actor, is that when Dougie transforms into Dale, you know it. All of a sudden, he was Dale Cooper, and there wasn't a flashing light saying, now he's Dale Cooper. He wakes up, and you know
he's back.
There was just something changed in his appearance and the way he carried himself, and you recognize that that character that he had played 25 years ago was authentic and was back.
Yeah.
And then by the time he plays Richard...
I was going to say, here's another spoiler alert. There's actually a fourth part that Kyle plays,
which is like a combination of Dale and Mr. C.
Yep.
When he shoots the guy in the foot in the diner, it's Dale, but there's a slight edge to his violence, which Dale never had. And it's a fourth character whose now name is Richard.
Right. What I also loved, David Lynch himself plays a major role.
He gave himself a nice role, that is no question about it.
But how delightful. It only works because he had Miguel Ferrer to play off of.
His scene partner.
And one of his last pieces of work before sadly passing. Miguel Ferrer has passed. But what a lovely reunion.
And I keep going back to the fourth episode, the last scene in the fourth episode where Gordon turns up his hearing aids, Lynch's hearing aids, and has this real whispered scene with Miguel. And Miguel, I believe, was ill during the making of this, and it kind of showed on his face a bit. So, and knowing that he was no longer with us, to have this real quiet, intimate scene between them, and it was by far Lynch's best acting ever. I mean, he's fun to watch on camera, but he's not an actor. Was revelatory, as this whole show was. This show was probably some of the greatest television that's ever aired. Nothing has been seen like it on TV, ever. And I would go so far as to say that with all of its flaws, and there were a lot of flaws about this, which I'm sure we'll talk about, and with all this sort of uncomfortable politics that, lowercase p politics that shine through in this, I would say that this is a career-capping masterpiece. I don't know how Lynch could ever top this.
Right. And you almost wonder at the end if they left the door open for more, but would it be wise to go back?
Right.
After seeing such wonderful performances from people we haven't seen in a long time. The Log Lady...
Who left us?
Catherine
Coulson.
Hawk, the gentleman that plays Hawk.
Miguel, of course. Who else?
And then it's just wonderful to see the folks grown up.
Yeah. Bobby Briggs and Lucy and Andy, they're all now in their 50s. And it was delightful to be reunited with them.
Yeah. So... I think the overriding question of what was going on, we learned, from the original series, who actually did kill Laura Palmer.
Right. It was, spoiler, it was her dad, Leland Palmer, played by Ray Wise, who does make brief appearances peppered throughout this season. as possessed by Killer Bob, played by the late Frank Silva, who in archival images returns as Bob. Frank Silva died about 15 years ago. Funny story about Frank Silva as Bob. Frank Silva was not an actor. He was the prop man. And there was one shot where something frightening happens to Grace Zabriskie, who plays the mom, plays Sarah Palmer, Laura Palmer's mom, and she shot up, and there was a mirror behind her, and as you do during production, everyone kind of crouches down, you know, to get out of the actor's eye line, and there was Frank Silva reflected in the mirror looking up, and the cameraman said, "David, we got to do it again. Frank Silva was seen in the mirror," and David went, "Wait, that's it. We're going to keep it. That'll be a new character," and created Bob on the spot. And Frank Silva was just, you know, he was wearing his own clothes. He was wearing the denim thing and had the long hair. And that became a cultural icon. Most unexpected, the most successful prop man in history is Frank Silva. And became one of the most frightening monsters in any kind of movie or TV show ever.
Absolutely. And so we see Bob leaving Leland's body.
Yeah.
And entering
Dale Cooper's at the end of season two of Twin Peaks, where he famously uttered, "How's Annie?" which was the last line of the show that frustrated viewers interminably. Up until this season, where the last line is going to drive everybody crazy.
And already is.
And already is. What year is it?
And that ultimately was the setup for this season. It's time for the return of Dale Cooper, but Mr. C, the evil version of Cooper, does not want to go back
to the Black Lodge.
To the Black Lodge, which is another realm, essentially.
Yeah.
And it is that journey of good versus evil. It is the FBI trying to track down
Dale Cooper, who's disappeared ever since the end of the last season.
And Major Briggs
and Philip Jeffries, another rogue agent who in the film was played by David Bowie, who sported a very fashionable sort of Hawaiian shirt and a
Miami Vice.
Very Miami Vice kind of outfit and a Southern accent. Through his Britishness, which I love all British actors, when they have to play American, they put on Southern. I love that. So, in his weird cameo, he comes out and says, "I'm not going to talk about Judy. In fact, we are not going to talk about Judy." And who knew that 25 years later, Judy would play such a monumentally important figure in this show. And really the last episode was devoted to Judy. And that's what I find so interesting, is that things that were throwaways in the movie, or seemingly throwaways, were given prominence and importance in this season. Harry Dean Stanton as,
oh my gosh,
the guy who runs the trailer park that Teresa Banks, a girl who was murdered in the town years before Laura Palmer, which was just touched upon in the prologue in Fire Walk With Me, he makes his return in this as the same character, who in the film, there was a trailer that was owned by the Chalfont family. And then, as we see in the last episode, Chalfont plays a sort of mysterious, makes a mysterious appearance.
And then I think that's what's so interesting and fascinating and frustrating is that you don't know what is going to be significant and what's going to be a throwaway.
Right.
And so for 18 hours, we were on the edge of our seats trying to, where is this going? Who's this person? What's that? Trying to memorize all of it, only to find out 3/4 of it didn't go anywhere. No. It was just pure entertainment, or, you know, this is what's going on while this is happening in Dakota, North Dakota. This is what's happening down in Mexico. Like, there were all these different storylines happening, and a lot was fun because it did bring in a lot of cameos. It did let you revisit fun characters from before, but as the end started getting closer, we were still wondering, where is this going? What does this mean? How will this end?
Yeah, and even 30 seconds before the show ended, I had no idea where it was going to end.
Exactly, and truthfully, it felt more that episode 17, hour 17, was more the ending to make people feel good.
Yeah. Because that's when all the characters came back, and
they're all back in Twin Peaks.
It was an exciting episode. There was Mr. C got his comeuppance. There was the little weird, I don't know what those trolls were.
I think they have some type of name.
I don't know. I mean, like, you felt like you were watching Twin Peaks,
right?
Which you didn't always feel like.
Correct.
Throughout the show. Again, this was a frustrating masterpiece. This was not flawless by any stretch. I guess as all great masterpieces are.
Sure.
Flawed. That's what makes them masterpieces. But it was one of those episodes where you really felt like, oh, you're back in comfort. It was comfortable because it was familiar.
It was familiar, and you were cheering for some characters.
Yeah.
Dougie, there. Cooper gave a part of himself to replace Dougie, and so that was a lovely wrap-up for the folks back in Las Vegas. It was just an exciting episode to see everyone in the same room again.
Yeah.
Even David Lynch and Miguel, they all show up, and so you're like, yay, oh my gosh, what's gonna happen in the next episode?
And then nothing happens in the next episode. He drives for 15 minutes.
We're led to believe that he is going to basically go back and save Laura Palmer.
Right.
That he has this ability to stop her from being killed. And so that's how episode 17 ends, if I recall.
Yeah.
He's holding her hand, walking through the woods, and then she lets go and disappears. And then we pick up in episode 18, and he basically needs to find Laura Palmer, but she goes by a different name.
Right.
And it...
And she works at Judy's.
She works at Judy's in Texas. And he shows up at her door. She's a waitress who hasn't shown up at work for 3 days. So after a very interesting altercation at Judy's diner, eat at Judy's, he shows up at her front door. And that was exciting to see her.
Cheryl Lee, yeah.
After all these years, because we'd only been seeing her really in flashbacks from prior performances or some very interesting camera magic. Some a little farther away, the camera pulls away a little bit. There's some wigs going on, but it's lovely to see her as she is today. But she doesn't know who Laura Palmer is. And so it is this road trip back to Twin Peaks with Richard and Carrie. Her name is Carrie.
Yeah.
And we just sort of looked at each other like, what?
Because they drove for 10 minutes of screen time.
Without much talking.
I would also, speaking of which, I would also like to just address the fact that she had a dead man in sitting on her couch.
Flies.
Rigor mortis in his arms. A bullet hole in his head. His brain on the wall. Gray pallor. You know, like you do.
Like you do.
Oh, so that's why she hasn't been at work in 3 days. Mm. Because she killed her boyfriend or husband or whatever.
And she's more concerned about bringing a jacket. Will it be cold?
And that she let Dale Cooper into her house, knowing that there's, you know...
Yeah, he identified himself as FBI, yeah. So...
Oh, please come right in. Here's my dead boyfriend, who clearly I shot. Fascinating.
And so this is, you know, you're sitting in the last hour, you know it's all coming to an end, and it's... I just constantly kept, where is this going? This is unlike the previous hour. This is slow. This is deliberate.
Yeah.
This is mystifying. Like, what is happening in these last minutes?
Yeah. And you didn't know.
You didn't know. And they show up to what we thought was Laura Palmer's house, and he knocks on the door, and it's not her mother. It's not Sarah, who still lived there in the in the alternate timeline.
Yeah. It's some other woman who admits that she bought the house from the Chalfont family, which was like, ding, 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 ding.
And she's talking to some man, we believe.
Her husband,
but you never see
him. Behind the door, and I was like, well, who's it going to be? Right. They're going to reveal it to be who? Is it going to be Harry Dean Stanton? Is it going to be Michael Ankeen? Is it coming out of retirement? Who is it going to be? Nobody. We never saw him. And it was not Laura Palmer's house, and she was not Laura Palmer. That we know of until she screams.
Because then this is where the theories abound. And I don't think we even have a good one at this point. Sorry if you were hanging in there for an earth-shattering theory. I think we're here to it's like group therapy right now. We're just here to share, what does it mean? And once again, David Lynch and Mark Frost have left us with a question that we will all be uttering.
Mm-hmm. What happened?
But what year is it? And then Carrie/Laura screams, and boy, is she a good screamer.
She could scream. She's got some pipes.
She's good. And that's where we're left to wonder, does she realize... Has she awoken? Has everything come flooding in of who Laura Palmer is and was and experienced? And does Richard, a.k.a. Dale, know exactly who he is? I kept screaming sequel. But I don't know if we're ever going to get that.
I don't know if we should get it.
We're not worthy?
Well, I don't know if so much as that we're not worthy, so much as when you explain the monster, it no longer is a monster.
That's true.
And if you explain it, then there's nothing for us to talk about. We'll be talking about what year is it for years.
It's like Rosebud.
It's like Who Shot JR?
These are great.
Or did you... For those of us who watched The Sopranos, particularly the last episode of The Sopranos, as he's sitting in the diner playing
Don't Stop Believin',
and the daughter is in the car, and what's happening, and your heart's pounding because you're like, he's going to get whacked. Oh, he is going to get whacked. He didn't get whacked.
Well, it just goes to black.
And I was at a party, and it went to black, and everyone went, no! We thought that the TV had broken or something. And then, created by David James. You know, so, but we're still talking about the last episode. Right. Not only the last episode, the last moment of The Sopranos. And we're going to be talking about the last moment of Twin Peaks in which, after Laura Palmer's slash Carrie screams that blood-curdling scream, all the lights in the house go out and we cut to black.
Yeah.
Wow.
It was wonderful. Yeah. And yes, it's not for everyone. I don't know if Showtime got the numbers that they had hoped for, but they certainly, I think, got the accolades mm-hmm. and the recognition for doing something different and investing in David Lynch at this time in his career, who still had a lot to offer and still does.
Yeah. But, I mean, that was 18 dense hours. That is a novel. That is War and Peace. That is...
But look, in a summer that didn't have much else to offer, there's Game of Thrones. Yeah. But that has its own audience. This brought a whole new set of eyes to Showtime that wasn't there before.
Yeah.
If you're going to watch Homeland, you watch Homeland. But this brought folks who had a real love for Twin Peaks yeah. and David Lynch to their platform. I mean, I thought it was brilliant.
Mm-hmm. And maybe they didn't get the numbers they had hoped. They certainly got numbers, but I don't know how realistic their projections were. But they got the cultural sphere. They were talking. People, the culture is talking about this show, so they're getting something you can't buy.
Right.
Cultural influence. I mean, it either happens or it doesn't, and it's happened, so for that, they won. And they created, I don't mean to use hyperbole, but they funded one of the greatest TV shows ever. Is it for everyone? No. Is it perfect? No. But because it is so special, because it is so unique, people are going to be talking about this show for years. I think that dissertations are going to be written about it in universities. I think that theories, fan theories, are going to be postulated for years to come, both sort of ridiculous fanfic and actual legitimate academic courses of investigation. It's just that special.
So if you haven't had a chance to check it out or you want to revisit it, you can see Twin Peaks The Return on Showtime. I know that Amazon is streaming the original series, and Showtime also has the movie Fire Walk With Me. So check them out. Check out Dune, check out Blue Velvet, Eraserhead. Just go and binge on David Lynch.
It's quite an experience.
Well, thank you for listening to this episode of Tapped. For more stories and information, please follow us on Twitter and Facebook at TappedPod.